Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Without a Roof. This is KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Non-Human Radio. Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the local seasonal and organic delights at Farmstar Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farmstar features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts with vegan and gluten-free offerings. Yes, for vegan options. They also offer craft beer and eclectic wines. Farmstar Pizza is open Monday through Friday for lunch, noon on Saturday and Sunday, and for dinner 7 nights a week, with a live jazz band on Wednesday and Thursday and Sundays. Located at 2359 The Esplanade, you can visit farmstarpizza.com or like them on Facebook. And we're also brought to you by Advantage Insurance Services. Local independent insurance broker Dave Dalton can provide for all your insurance needs. Advantage Insurance is proud to support KZFR and can be reached at 342-0540. For a quote or more information, visit them online at AdvantageInsuranceChico.com. So, welcome to Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM or streaming online at KZFR.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Non-Human Radio. I'm Jeannie Trezino. Today, I'm joined in the studio by Toby Benedetto, a local vegan activist who now works for the Good Food Institute, and by Hannah Kibler, who has celebrated her one-year veganiversary a little while ago, and who's going to share what that's been like and also her work at a local market for vegan advocacy. And if you're wondering what a veganiversary is, that's when you celebrate the day you went vegan. So she went vegan a little over a year ago. So, and if you're missing Danny Toms, never fear. He should be back next week as my curmudgeonly co-host. So I am so happy to welcome back Toby Benedetto. She's been on a few times before talking about a couple of different subjects, but today she's going to talk about the Good Food Institute, which is a high-end organization that works on many fronts to make widespread plant-based food a reality. Unlike other groups that do vegan advocacy that are based on helping individuals go vegan, this group, which is what we do here at Non-Human Radio, we're here working one-to-one, one listener, one radio show at a time. The Good Food Institute works on the macro, big-picture aspects of our food system. So the new nonprofit works with scientists, investors, and entrepreneurs to create new products and new modalities and to create more pathways to make good plant-based food a reality. We'll learn a little bit more about the Good Food Institute, or GFI, from Toby. And before we get started in that conversation, I also want to introduce Hannah Kibler, who we'll be talking to in the second half of the show. And I want to introduce her now because I hope she'll be chiming in on the conversation. So welcome to you both. Toby, welcome back. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Go ahead and let's tell our listeners what you do at the Good Food Institute and how GFI got started. And if I recall correctly, it's a project that spun off from the other animal advocacy group, the amazing animal advocacy group called Mercy for Animals.
Absolutely, yes. I am the executive assistant there. I get to assist Bruce Friedrich, who's been one of my heroes for years. He's based in Washington, D.C., but everybody that works at GFI is remote, so I am here in Chico, and I get to work from home, which is also amazing.
Yes, but you get to work with a three-hour time difference then, right?
Yes, luckily I'm an early riser. I grew up in New York, and I don't think I ever really quite got off of East Coast time, so Bruce comments a lot that I'm a very early riser, but it works out well.
So you're not a California girl?
No,
really. Okay. All right. Carry on.
You can claim me if you want. Yes. But yes, the team at Mercy for Animals, Nathan Runkle, Nick Cooney, they kind of got together with Bruce just over a year ago, and they had been noticing the success of companies like Hampton Creek Foods and Impossible Foods.
Oh, yeah, Hampton Creek is just mayo, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
Okay.
And, I mean, these companies didn't even exist a decade ago, and now they're valued at more than $2 billion combined, and they've raised more than $400 million just the past 5 years.
Cool.
So this is money that, you know, traditionally wouldn't have been handed over in a check to Mercy for Animals or to PETA, but it's coming at the market side of things to fight factory farming and, you know, the problems associated with factory farming. So these guys got together and they kind of brainstormed the Good Food Institute to harness technology and use market-based solutions to build on behavioral economics. Basically, the three of us in this room and maybe a lot of our listeners, you know, use things like animal welfare or the environment as, you know, things that we think about when we shop. Most people don't. I mean, to be realistic,
right.
A lot of people, they want, you know, price, they want taste, and they want convenience because they're busy. And
they want what they're used to.
Exactly. So we're coming at it from that end. We're going to basically take ethics off the table and make plant-based and clean meat the default choice.
Okay. So that's why, and so like the word vegan isn't even necessarily a word GFI uses.
No, we don't even really, I mean, we come at things, when we talk about these issues, we're talking about the environment, we're talking about human health, we're talking about sustainability, and yes, animal welfare, but that's usually the fourth thing that we address.
Right. So, so when I looked at their website, it looked like there were four major areas. You sort of touched on them. One, they provide strategic support to startup plant-based food companies, so like new companies, like the next Hampton Creek or the next Impossible Burger,
right?
Okay, and then they also do incubating of what I call innovators, what look like innovators. So not necessarily company-type innovators, but the actual individuals,
right?
They foster them. So students, grad students, scientists already in the field, I guess, of biotechnology.
Yes.
And then also entrepreneurs, which would be the business sector.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So that sounds cool. Yeah, I think, look, we can talk later. They have a connection with a project at UC Berkeley that we talked about last week.
Yes, we're so excited about that.
Okay, good. And then also they're looking, so that's two areas. And the third area is they're looking at working within existing institutions, right? So not starting up new grant funding institutions from scratch with an endowment, but rather looks like they're looking to kind of get existing grant organizations to give out money and grants in the plant-based field.
Right. Okay. We're trying to kind of channel government and grant-based funds into this space.
Okay. So, so am I correct in thinking like they're trying to influence something like the National Institutes of Health and their grant procedures, also something like the Bill Gates Foundation type thing? Okay, because I know Bill Gates has come out really strongly saying that plant-based food is sort of important to a global basis, right?
Yeah.
Okay, for purposes of the environment and for human health.
Exactly.
Right? And yeah, so like Bill Gates isn't somebody who's looking very much at the moral aspect of plant-based eating.
Right.
I mean, I think he cares about animal cruelty, but
sure.
That's not something he's going to...
But he's looking to solve things like, you know, climate change and world poverty and things like that. And this is a great way to solve all of these issues.
Okay. And then the last part of the platform for the Good Food Institute looks like it's also promoting plant-based products to existing food vendors and institutions, restaurants, grocery stores, and like food services.
Right, like one of the projects we're working on is making a list of the top 100 restaurant chains and then networking with them and getting vegan options on all of their menus.
So kind of lobbying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, so I'd like to hear more about everything. We've already talked a lot about everything, but what I'm particularly interested in is that third item where how GFI is going about working with existing endeavors like the grant making foundations and corporations. And so we're speaking with Toby Benedetto. We're talking about the Good Food Institute and changes hopefully coming up ahead on the food scene for the Western developed countries mostly.
Yes,
mostly in North America.
Actually, a lot of what's happening, I'm learning, because remember, I'm new. So what I'm learning is a lot of this is actually happening like in Europe and India and China. And it's not.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, you know, GFI right now is based here. One of the, you know, I know we'll talk later about kind of how people can get involved, and we're hiring. And one of the jobs is basically an international outreach director.
Oh,
and we'll be going international, which is exciting.
And actually, you know what? I want to back up a bit, and even if we run out of time, what I want to hear more about is, aside from what I just said,
there's so much, I know.
What is clean meat?
Right?
You mentioned that in passing,
yeah.
And I think it's going to be important.
Something that I'd be interested to hear about, too.
Yeah,
okay.
It's pretty fascinating, and I have to say, if I could, you know, go back 25 years and kind of do things over again, this is what, like, the science side of me would be so thrilled to get involved in. But basically, in taking these things that people consider when they shop, taste, pricing, convenience, and familiarity, like you were saying, if we can give them the same product, the same meat, but it's, we can take animals out of the equation, that's pretty perfect scenario, right? So what clean meat does, and it is happening, it's actually already a thing, we're working on driving the funds and the energy and the talent into scaling it. Basically, cells are taken from an animal, and these cells are they're added to basically a media, a mixture of ingredients that work as a food source to grow the cells, to give them the nutrients. And when I say cells, we're talking about fat cells, we're talking about muscle cells, everything that's in a traditional chicken breast or a meatball or a steak. These cells, once they're added to the media, they grow and divide just like they do in nature. So we're not talking about anything that's GMO or anything, you know, kind of scary. People start thinking about like Franken meat and things like that. And that's not what's happening. Just like, you know, a small plant grows into a large plant. That's what we're doing. We're just giving what happens in nature a place to do it and how to scale it. So as these cells grow and divide, we provide scaffolding, which is, it's basically just a structure that allows the cells to grow and differentiate and grow into an organized pattern. So you get things like marbling that you want to see in a steak.
So it's in vitro cultivation of meat.
Yes.
Basically.
Right.
Okay.
And so all of these things, the cells, the media, and the scaffolding, are put into what's called a bioreactor. And it's kind of like fermenting like a beer, like beer in a brewery. So if you can kind of envision the future, think about something like, you know, we're all pretty familiar with Sierra Nevada Brewery and the big, shiny stainless steel and, you know, all of these it's something that we will be able to go and tour. We'll be able to go into, you know, a brewery and see where meat is grown, as opposed to how many people kind of want to go into a slaughterhouse and see what happens. You know,
okay.
So this is the future that we're taking it. And we call it clean meat because it's clean for the environment. It's so much better than raising animals. And
well, sure, right? Because mm-hmm. like when you raise an animal, if you raise a cow and you intend to slaughter that animal for food, there's a lot of waste involved with that because that whole cow isn't made of, quote, meat.
Right.
Right. There's bones and nerves and things
right.
like that and tails and things, some of which get converted into byproducts. But a lot of it isn't really directly consumed by people. So,
right.
So this clean meat process means 100% of the input is converted into 100% of the output,
mm-hmm.
or almost 100%. And that's something that, like, in the animal ag business, they're always talking about the conversion rate and how much food you have to feed an animal.
Exactly.
And how much of that ends up as literally waste, right? Poop
mm-hmm.
and pee. And how much of it ends up as muscle and how much of it ends up as this bone and skin and stuff that's not as lucrative as the muscle, I guess,
right,
that they're looking
right.
to sell.
And so, transporting them and going through
yeah.
the whole process.
So this clean meat process sounds like economically it might work out in in favor for a big company to actually go in full bore and try to make this work.
Right.
That's assuming that consumers will buy it, right?
Right.
So, like, would you buy it, Hannah? Probably not, right?
It doesn't sound appealing to me because it's real meat, but I think that I like that the process is a lot less wasteful. There's a lot less suffering.
And we're not the target.
We're not the target.
100% vegan, more ethical vegan is not the target market for this. That's
exactly.
For the people who are like, if they don't care if they're eating a McDonald's burger, you know what I mean? Like, and not to mention, I think, like, the pet food industry, right? Like, this is a great opportunity to feed our cats.
I know.
Dogs,
that's another
right?
thing I'm really excited about with this technology. So,
okay. All right.
So cleaner for the environment, cleaner for our health. There are no foodborne pathogens. There's no drug residues, no antibiotic use, and, you know, cleaner for the animals. So it's kind of a win-win all the way around.
Okay.
I think it seems like a really great solution as far as instead of asking somebody to give up meat, you can say, why don't you just buy some ethical meat?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And even if not everybody's on board with that, if there's even a percentage, you can start chipping away and eventually, like, another generation or another 15 or 20 years goes by and hopefully people, you know, it keeps growing its market share. Okay, well, that's a good thumbnail vision of clean meat. I'm still getting used to that idea personally.
I know.
Okay.
Yeah, it throws me off a little.
Yeah. And let's talk briefly about the UC Berkeley project. And, like, I want to hear about it from the Good Food Institute side of things. Since we talked about it last week about the Challenge Lab, the Challenge project at UC Berkeley.
Yeah, that one of my coworkers, Christy Legale, she designed this course with a professor at UC Berkeley. And so basically 10 teams of kids are going to be learning about and designing their own plant-based meat.
Right. So we talked about that aspect. Mm-hmm. What I'm really interested in is how she got UC Berkeley to sign on to this.
Right. You know what? I haven't heard the backstory so much.
Okay.
I think a lot of that happened before I started.
Okay. Well, carry
on.
But
I can say from my experience there that it's not, from what I have seen, universities, all kinds of institutions are really eager and excited to work with us. So I think that's been one of the most inspirational and hopeful thing that I have seen.
Oh, good. It must be because you guys are not the so-called stereotypical angry vegan.
No, we're not. We're very collaborative. Very collaborative, yes.
Cool. Okay. Anyway, I cut you off. Go ahead and finish on what the project's about and what the challenge is about.
Oh, well, so these teams of kids are basically, since it sounds like you've kind of covered it, they're going to be competing they're going to present their projects and competing for a $5,000 prize, as well as a chance to basically work with venture capital groups to have this materialize.
What's the goal of the project? What's the name of it? Like, is it
the title of the course, you mean?
What is each team trying to do? Are they trying to create the clean meat?
Oh, yes. Or are they trying to basically innovate a new product.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, cool. And will there be like a taste testing if they get that far?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm
wondering
I'm not sure
who wins.
Yeah, there's going to be a panel, and I think they're still deciding on who's going to be sitting in on that panel. But I know I would love to sit in on the pitches. I would love to sample it. That'd be an awesome gig to be on.
Okay.
On that,
right. Well, that's cool. So if people want to know more about the Good Food Institute, how would they do that?
GFI.org.
Okay.
And follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And I will say that on GFI.org, you can find, of course, a place to donate, which is, you know, yay for that. You can read blogs. We have an amazing writer, Emily Bird, and her blogs are brilliant and entertaining, and I promise you'll find them really exciting to read.
It is a very well-written site.
I know. She's so
good.
Good. And you'll find our job opportunities as well. We're hiring, I think, 18 new positions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. So maybe some of our Chico State, like, biology or biotech grads.
Absolutely. Might be internships, okay. All kinds of
cool.
things. Yeah.
All right. That's really good to know. I think Chico is growing into a more of a tech heavy city with a lot of connections to Silicon Valley and innovation. So maybe there's some biotech or other, or maybe even a food entrepreneur in Chico who might be, might want to get connected with GFI. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So I look forward, maybe we can have you on the show again to talk about
GFI. I would love
GFI.
It.
Awesome. 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 Okay. So thank you very much. That was really fascinating to learn about. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio. Now I'd like to talk briefly with Hannah Kibler and find out what it's like transitioning to veganism and what the highs and lows of that journey has been like. Also, her food advocacy. She's if I'm going to out her, she's an employee at she should be the employee of the month.
Yeah, absolutely.
If not more.
I'll second that.
At New Earth Market in Chico, and is helping make that store be way more vegan friendly. If we don't get a chance to talk about their options, really check it out. Check out the Chico Vegan Facebook group and see what kind of updates there are on new options. So welcome to the show, Hannah Kibler.
Thank you for having me.
So what made you decide to go vegan?
Well, it wasn't a decision that I came to all at once. It kind of happened incrementally. But I think what I end up telling most people is that it was more about logic than it was about heart. And so I had seen a few posts about a documentary called Cowspiracy, and I decided to go ahead and watch it. And it's an environmental documentary, so there's nothing too gruesome in it, really. But it just blew me away, the information that I learned about factory farming and the way that that affects the environment. And so
it's a great documentary, Cowspiracy. Mm-hmm. Is it streaming on Netflix now?
Yeah, and I think there's actually a new version that they might have put out, so they...
Oh, good. Yeah. Yeah, we've screened it in Chico at least once, and hopefully we can screen it again and make it more of a community event. So anyway,
yeah,
Kira.
I highly suggest it to anyone. But so after watching that, I had all this information, and I thought to myself, well, if I'm going to call myself an environmentalist, I guess I'm going to make some changes. Mm-hmm. And so the first thing I decided to do was to give up beef, because they kind of outlined that that was one of the things that affected the environment a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Cattle are grazers, and their biology is such that they emit a lot of methane through flatulence, through farts. And so yes. Methane is a potent greenhouse gas, and that's good. I'm glad that message got through.
Yeah, and not only that, but the water footprint of producing beef, just the sheer amount of water that it takes.
Oh, yeah.
So there were a lot of things, but it didn't take long for me to decide to go full vegan, because, as you may know, Netflix will suggest other things for you to watch. And so I kind of fell down the documentary hole, and I started watching a lot of documentaries, and which prompted me to start doing a lot of research. And I learned about factory farming, which seems a little odd now, but I'd never really heard about it. I didn't really know about it, because I grew up on a small scale farm, kind of a hobby farm, and so my experience of what farming was very different than that. And after doing my research and really, digging up these videos, I realized, this is what I need to do.
Well, good. So part of that was your heart telling you too, though, right?
I mean, yes. And it was the impetus needed to be something logical, like, okay, I need to do this for the environment, as a responsible human living on this planet,
honestly,
this is what I should be doing.
Honestly, doesn't the decision... I found the decision to go vegan became very clear once I had this underpinning of the system I was partaking in that
oh,
was
absolutely.
Causing. Mm-hmm. For me, it was more the animal suffering that this food system produces, and then secondarily the environmental impact. So it sounds for you the environment was first, and now it's, mm-hmm. now it is, of course, the ethical implications, the moral implications.
Yeah, you kind of start connecting all of those dots, and you start seeing that there's a lot of reasons, and it just makes sense for so many different reasons. And yeah.
Okay, cool. And how long, from when the time you watched Cowspiracy to when you went full vegan, how long?
I would say about 2.5 months.
Awesome. That's quick. That's pretty quick. That's pretty quick for a big change like that, right? Because it put you at odds with your family, I assume with family and friends and not at odds, but
it wasn't so much at odds. It was more of like no one around that area is really, that's not a lifestyle that a lot of people live. So it was kind of like, oh, this is weird, but that's cool.
Okay. And have you been enjoying it?
I have. I think that it has allowed me to kind of connect to other people more and to be more intentional with just the way I live my life in general.
That's great.
I feel like when I first watched that documentary, I was kind of angry that I didn't know about all these things. And it sent me on this journey to start discovering the way that my lifestyle might affect the planet and other people and the welfare of other living things. And so in a way, it kind of made me start looking at how everything I do affects other people. And so I think that to go vegan is kind of, it's not just about food, it's about the way you live your entire life. And so it's kind of brought me a lot of purpose, I think.
That's great, Hannah. We're listening to Hannah Kibler talk about her vegan journey that's been lasting a year now, and hopefully it'll last many years more. And I want you to share with our audience the advocacy that you've been doing on behalf of vegans at your place of work, which is the New Earth Market in Chico.
Yes. I'm very fortunate to work at a store that's locally owned. So, you know, we have a lot of freedom as far as those things go. And I've kind of become known as the vegan there. There's several vegans there, but I'm kind of like the, you know, I get paged, you know, to the freezer aisle because somebody has a question. I feel like they approached me to say, hey, you know, we want to offer more vegan options. Do you want to collaborate with us? And I was like, absolutely. And so I've been working to do several things. Some of the things I do is to help customers in the store. Like about a month ago, we had a couple come in that said, hey, we decided to go vegan and we're restocking our entire kitchen. Can you help us? And I was like, yes, I can. And so, you know, I was able to do a tour of the store with them and find out their reasons and help them find products that I thought would be helpful.
Can I just ask, what were their reasons? Animal welfare? Was it?
Their reasons were actually health reasons.
Okay.
They had watched Forks Over Knives. Mm-hmm. And I made sure to ask them first because that will change, you know, what I'm going to suggest to them.
What kind of goodies you're going to recommend?
I'm going to point them away from the cheesecake. But but she actually, the lady that I had interviewed, messaged me about a month later and was like, you know, since you gave us our tour, I've learned a lot about reasons why someone might go vegan. And I appreciate that you asked us why first, because I think that she's experienced the different reasons and some of the internet backlash that can come from that sometimes.
I have to tell you, I'm so impressed. I mean, for being vegan just over a year, you're a natural advocate. You really are.
We're lucky.
We're so lucky.
New Earth is lucky to have you, because I think, you know, just one well-spoken person, mm-hmm. no matter what your persuasion, can spark a lot of change. And it's definitely, I've seen changes in the deli and the hot bar and like,
yeah,
you know, for and our listeners who don't know,
that is something we have been working on, the hot food bar, having more options. And that's something that I feel like has a lot of opportunities for advocacy that you might not think about, as far as, you know, it's not just offering more options for people who are already vegan, but it's kind of modeling for people who aren't.
Yep.
It's showing people, mm-hmm. hey, you know, we can have biscuits and gravy.
Yeah,
we can
have
French toast. And also I often see people who clearly aren't vegan trying out vegan food. And
yep.
so
and it won't kill them.
Yeah.
And they won't gag. It's actually quite good if it's made well. You know, it's quite good.
You can say that about any diet or lifestyle.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Absolutely, yeah.
So thank you very much. That's just fascinating and hopeful, and Chico is changing. I really, really like it. And you're both part of that change. So I want to thank you both. So, all right. We're going to move on to the calendar of events. There's only one event I want to highlight, which is our great local resource The Om Foods is celebrating their one-year anniversary. They have their Valentine's Day and one-year anniversary. So because Valentine's Day is next week, I think folks ought to know about it. 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., they're having a little mini festival with vegan lunch options and musicians. So between 11 and 3 on Tuesday, February 14th at Om Food, which is at 1008 West Sacramento in the Safeway parking lot. Check it out. And also check them out at iloveomfoods.com. All right. So we are about done with the show. I'm trying to find my end of my script